Ain't No Crying Till the War's Done, a Dream SMP fan fiction written by Soft No Blade and read by Fens and Marshes, with additional tags, The Syndicate, Nikki Niatucentric, and Sometimes a Family Can Be Four Anarchists in the Tundra. Summary: Nikki Niatu has always had a war to fight. This time, she thinks it might be the right one. Once upon a time, she'd thought TNT would be hot to the touch, thought it would burn her fingers, smell of fire and brimstone and death. Now, as she packs bricks of it away into storage, she knows this. TNT is cool to the touch. Now, older, wiser, and far more cynical than she had once been, she knows this. 1. Silence is a weapon. 2. Governments never end well. 3. TNT is cool to the touch. And it's here, with this knowledge and this power and the fact that no matter what she does, Tommy and it will not die, that she makes a choice. It's here, with a storage room full of TNT, Wilbur's coat around her shoulders and the crackling snap of the Lamantry burning in her ears, that she makes a choice. She gathers her weapons, her armor, straps her sword to her hip, scoops her trident up from its place against the wall and heads into the tundra. Because it goes like this. Nikki Niatu has always had a war to fight. This time, she thinks it might be the right one. Once upon a time, she'd looked out over the ruins of the community house. Looked out over the battles raging within. Looked over at how Tommy screams and Technoblade steps back. Once, twice, as his only ally turns against him. She'd looked at a man whose words meant nothing to those he said them to, and she'd wondered, is this how I look to others? Schlatt had let her speak at Tubbo's execution. He'd stood far above her, amused smile on his face, but he'd let her speak. She knows, of course, that he hadn't listened. He'd never intended to listen, just to let her scream herself hoarse, only to fall just the same as Tubbo had. But he had let her speak. Here she looks at Tommy and she knows. Tommy will not listen. He does not plan to let Technoblade speak, and if he does anyway, Tommy does not plan to listen. Tommy is not the same as Schlatt, she knows, but Technoblade. Oh. Techno might be the same as Nikki had been before she'd chosen to stay silent, before she'd refused to raise her voice to those who will not stand for her, who will not listen to her, and she wonders if Techno will ever learn that. She hopes not. She looks out over the ruins of the community house as Dream steps in, promises his aid, and immediately leaves his ally to flounder alone, and she wonders, is that how they saw me? Wilbur hadn't told her, she remembers. He'd planned to blow it sky high and leave her there with no warning. He hadn't planned to kill her, she doesn't think, but she doesn't think he would have cared if she had died in the explosion. She doesn't think he would have cared if anyone had, not with how deep he'd spiraled by the end. He'd left her alone in the ruins of her country, left her to die in the wake of his pain. She cannot blame him for his suffering, she knows, but she can blame him for all he caused in its grasp, and that she will. She does not want to hate him, and she does not want to speak ill of the dead, but the dead left her hurting and alone, and while she now knows what he'd meant when he'd ranted in the dim lantern light of Pogtopia, Lamanberg is a sickness, Nikki, it's a plague, and it must be stomped out. She will not let him remain in her heart, tearing it to pieces while he does. She watches as Technoblade vanishes into the nether portal, as all her so-called allies yell, searching for him in vain, and realizes with an absent sort of pain, "Oh, if I speak up, they won't listen." So she doesn't. She lets him leave, lets their words wash over her as they curse and search and plan. 24 hours, Dream said. 24 hours, and he and Techno turn Lemanberg into a chunk error. Lemanberg is a sickness. Silence is a weapon. Nikki Nietzsche shuts her mouth and barely contains the smile tugging at the edges. She can't wait. 2. Once upon a time, she'd been trusting. She'd believed in him, believed that they were doing the right thing, believed everything he'd told her about the war, about Dream, about Lemanberg, everything. In retrospect, the first time she should have realized something was wrong was the moment he declared Lemanberg a dictatorship. In retrospect, the first red flags had been well before his spiral, well before he'd fallen into the self-destructive mindset that led him to hit the button and take his father down with him. Wilbur had been a bomb himself, she thinks, primed and ready to explode almost the entire time she'd known him. It's fitting, then, that he rigged his creation to blow up with him. And it is fitting, then, that Lemanberg's final end comes for it in an explosion. It is fitting, then, that her bakery goes with it, and watching it fall to ruin, knowing that she had been its birth and its destruction, she thinks she knows how Wilbur had felt now. The exhilaration of knowing something that means nothing is now gone. Gone at your hands and your hands alone. It's intoxicating. Now, watching from the sidelines as withers whirl through the sky, as Technoblade's laughter rings in the air, as lightning illuminates Filz's wings, ragged and torn, as he launches himself from the docks to enter the heart of the fray, she wonders. Lemanberg had rebuilt last time from nothing but rubble and the hope in their hearts. But Lemanberg cannot be allowed to do the same this time. Technoblade had been right months ago as he spawned withers in the ruins of a once great country. Wilbur had been right when he'd told her Lemanberg was a plague, and now she watches them scramble to save an unsavable country and she wonders, how do you break the already broken? Lemanberg, she knows, values symbolism and history above so much else, built on lies and nationalism and symbolism, and if there's one thing she knows, it's the symbols of Lemanberg. They forget, often, that she was one of the first to join, that she fought for this country, lived for this country, suffered for this country as it was built through every moment it fell. She knows what they value, the symbols they hold so highly, and she turns her rage to the one thing to survive every conflict, Lemanberg's tree. It stands outside the range of Dream's grid, a sole survivor amongst the rubble, amongst the boom of lightning and explosives alike. It's an oak, she knows, and the bark of an oak tree does not burn well, but that is a challenge more than a setback, and as she strikes the base with her axe, cutting deep into the heart of the wood, she knows it is not a challenge that will stump her for long. Because it goes like this. Oak, when cut, makes good firewood. It burns clean and hot, and while the bark of this tree is coated in the lashing rain that almost barely covers the roar of Techno's fireworks, the core is dry. Nikki Nietzsche lights the Leman tree on fire and watches it burn from the inside out, devouring itself as Lemanberg once did. Governments, after all, never end pretty. The tree does. 3. Once upon a time, Nikki may have given in to it all. Maybe she would have accepted the taxes, accepted the incursion on her territory, accepted the invitation offered to her, red flags and all. But this is not Once Upon a Time. This is not the version of herself that she left behind in the ruins of the community house, in the wreckage caused by Doomsday at Technoblade's door. This time, Nikki Nietzsche leans back in her chair, listens to the crackle pop of lava behind her, and announces, "I found a government." Phil perks up immediately, leans forwards and rests decorated arms on the table. His arms are covered in both gold jewellery and in intricate, swirling lines of ink. Nikki's always been fascinated by it, ever since she met him, but there's never been a good time to bring it up. Maybe after this, she thinks, after their first expedition as a group, after her first governmental takedown. Today might hold a lot of firsts, and Nikki can feel herself vibrating with the energy of it. "A new government?" Phil asks, eager in that way he always is when there's a hint of destruction on the horizon. "One we can take down or just need to check out?" Nikki grins, something vicious that she's only come into recently. She likes how it looks on her face, though, natural but mean in a way she never was before this. It's good for her, she thinks. She's less of a pushover, less likely to be dragged into things she doesn't fully want to do or never got the chance to fully think through. But for this, her grin is not only suitable for her, but suitable for the information she is about to convey to Phil's Minecraft as well. "Considering they built on my land, then tried to tax me for it, I'd say there's a sure bet of bad enough." Something in Phil's face shifts at the news, a darkness overcoming the glee written across his face. The claw rumble's been dragging along the table stills, and he glances up as well, fully tuning into the meeting for the first time tonight. Techno looks up as this shift occurs, eyes flicking to Phil, over Rambu, before landing on Nikki. Something glints in his eyes, the expression gone too quick for Nikki to catch what, exactly, it was. "They're taxing you?" he asks, voice low, and Nikki knows where this will go. They've been a group for barely 2 weeks, but she already knows the lengths she'd go to for them. Now, sitting here, she wonders if they'd do the same for her. She thinks they would. "They're trying to," she says. "They call themselves Kinoko Kingdom. They've got propaganda up in old Lamanberg already, and they took down some of our omelet posters to do it." Rambu's claws dig into the table, leaving marks they'll never buff out, as his eyes flick straight to Techno, whose smile is vicious when he turns it towards her. His eyes are sharp and his teeth bared. He looks like he's ready for a fight. "Show us the way, Nemesis," he says. "I believe we have vengeance to enact." And Nikki had chosen that name for herself. She'd picked her name, picked the meaning, and she'd done so because it fit her. But now, hearing it from Techno's mouth, Nikki straightens her back, stands tall in a way she hadn't beforehand, and smiles, that new vicious grin that matches Techno's so well. They will get what they are due. And this is a call to action if Nikki has ever made one. Filza pushes himself to his feet, flares damaged wings, and drops his hand to his sword, and Techno joins him, axe resting against his cloaked shoulder. Rambu is slower, folding his long form out of the chair he'd been curled in, but when he stands taller than all of them, face set. Nikki's smile widens, viciously, brightly excited, as she joins them. "Well," Filza says, "lead on." And she does. Their trip is not a silent one. Rambu chatters away as he fixes the cake path, halting their progress, but not in a way that's bothering. Nikki takes a slice of cake herself, laughing as Rambu grumbles good-naturedly. His ability to form matter from nothing has never failed to amaze her, and she knows Phil feels the same with how he nudges her to point out a mostly eaten cake that Rambu takes into his hands, makes whole again in front of their eyes. Techno barks a laugh at Rambu's barely irritated muttering, leans into Phil to complain about his fate. What else can I teach him? My time is soon. Mourn me when I'm gone, Phil. And Phil's wheezing joins the noise surrounding them all, breathless and entertained. It's good to see, good to be part of, and Nikki smiles while watching it, watching how Techno's demeanor matches nothing about his appearance. Techno hasn't brought his dogs with him. Of course he hasn't, not after learning of Sapnap's presence in the kingdom. But he's still overprepared. Splash potions rattle against each other on his hip, his sword strapped to the other side. He's got his trident on his back, his axe in hand, armed to the teeth and fully ready for a fight. If she's honest, Nikki doesn't think it'll be much of one. But they're marching into battle either way, and Nikki's glad that they're overprepared. It's a contrast to Lamanberg, where they'd never been better equipped than their enemies. Now, though, as they head towards the gate of a kingdom of mushrooms, they find a distinct lack of maxed-out armor present amongst the members. Well, Technus says, amused, this will be easier than expected. They do, of course, talk it out at first. While they know already that this land is corrupt, that these people have no qualms about taxing even those who have no part in their government, no qualms about making desperate, harmful bids for power and siding with those who even the Syndicate cannot touch yet, they are still the Syndicate, and they will not attack without talking first. Nikki could have predicted what happens next. Carl says no. Kinoko Kingdom is mine, he says. It's my right to rule as I wish. It's no one's right to rule, Technoblade counters. There is no divine right to rule, no set allowance for people to have power over others. Nikki grips the hilt of her sword tighter, touches her free hand to the pouch of explosives she has strapped to her thigh. This is going to be a fight, and it is one she has no intention of losing. And it is not one she does. In the aftermath, Nikki wipes her blooded sword on her pants, staring up at the mushroom castle above her city. What are you going to do about it? Rambu asks, coming to stand at her side. Nikki hums, brushing light fingers over the pouch on her thigh. I have a few ideas, she says, grin playful, and Techno laughs, delighted. We'll leave you to it, he says, dropping a heavy hand on her shoulder and heading out the front gates. Filza follows, bumping his shoulder against hers, and Rambu offers a relatively awkward high five before following the other two out of the gate. Nikki's glad they leave, glad her plan won't hurt anyone. Because TNT, after all, may be cold to the touch, but when activated, it burns bright and hot and vicious. And Nikki Niachu joins her friends to watch the world burn down. The end. Thank you for listening.